This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time.
It's time.
Time to get in the zone.
Time to get in the zone.
With the 49ers Web Zone.
This is the No Huddle Podcast
with Al, Zane, and Brian.
The Niners are in an interesting position here now. They have a chance to really take a stranglehold on this division for many years to come, depending on obviously what happens at the quarterback position and the overall health of the team. Because look, Kyle Shanahan is not going anywhere. You've got an elite defense that is just kind of scratching the surface now with a lot of young talent. You've got elite skilled players on the offensive side of the ball, and you've got basically a championship level roster that's ready to win now, but is positioned such that they have a lot of, like you said, guys that are making less than $5 million, right? The three quarters of the roster is less than $5 million against the cap, which means that's a lot of younger players. Mm-hmm. So that being said, the rest of the NFC West right now is kind of the only threat to me right now is Seattle. And I'll be very honest with you. First of all, Pete Carroll, you have to respect the job that he did last year with Geno Smith and that group. That was like a ragtag group. He took them to the playoffs 100%. And you got to respect that. There's not a lot of coaches that can do that kind of work. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I don't expect Geno Smith to have the same type of year. He was a top three quarterback for most of the year last year in terms of quarterback rating. That's not going to happen this year. I don't see that happening. He may drop off like a little bit. He may be slightly worse, but he's not going to be top three. And I think that really the last 8 games of the season, I believe they lost 5 of them. The last 8 games of the season plus the playoffs, you really start to see Geno Smith coming back down to earth, and they struggled down the stretch. So I think you'll see more of that. They've got Kenneth Walker, who's a fantastic running back. Obviously, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. They've got really good Jordan Brooks on the defensive side of the ball. They've got Tariq Woolen and obviously Jamal Adams coming back from injury. But that is the only threat to me. The Arizona Cardinals are not going to do anything. Kyler Murray is an absolute albatross over that team. The Rams are basically in rebuilding mode at this point. They don't know what they're doing. They cashed in for 1 year and they succeeded, but now they're rebuilding as we thought they would. So really it's the Niners division to lose at this point. And what does the rest of the NFC West look like to you?
Yeah, so let's take a look at the moves that they've made, right? Because you're right. To me, it's a two-horse race between the 49ers and the Seahawks. I think currently the 49ers are still in a much better position than the Seahawks are. But I kind of like a lot of the moves that the Seahawks made this offseason, which pisses me off because I don't want to like the moves that they made. But very much in the vein of what the 49ers did with Javon Hargrave, the Seahawks did bring in some pretty solid talent on the defensive side of the ball. They added defensive tackle Draymond Jones, who was of the Broncos, very much in the same vein as Javon Hargrave. He is a three-tech pass rushing defensive tackle. They also brought in Jaron Reed at the defensive tackle position, but they let Puna Ford go. And Puna Ford is still a free agent, so I think there's a possibility that he could end up back there, but as it stands right now, he is gone. They also brought in one of the guys that I actually really was hoping the 49ers might be in on, and that was safety Julian Love from the Giants. And they brought him in on a really modest, I think it was like a 2-year deal. The guy's only like 26 years old, very versatile, can play free safety, can play in the slot, can even play outside. And so it's kind of odd because they already had like four really good safeties, and now they brought in what amounts to a fifth, right? They had Jamal Adams, they have Quandre Diggs, now they have Julian Love. They had another young guy that I think might end up, you know, being either a trade candidate or possibly a cut. And then they also brought in another guard to bolster that offensive line that had two rookie tackles last year that played really, really well, right? Those guys are going to be there for a long time. And then the only real losses that they had, if you're talking about impact, is and you could argue that it's not as impactful because he rarely played, but Rashad Penny left and is now with Philadelphia. And so they didn't really lose anybody from this team. They brought Geno back on a modest 3-year deal that I think really, if you look at the structure, is probably just a 1-year deal. If, like you said, if he falls back down to earth, or hell, here's the other thing about the Seahawks. They've got pick 5 in the draft and they've got a second first round pick. And I think it's in the, early teens. So they're ready to kind of load up right now. And, you know, what will be interesting is to see if they use that number 5 pick. If one of the quarterbacks falls, could they go quarterback? Or if there's a run on quarterbacks and four quarterbacks go in the first 4 picks, then they've got their pick of any other player that they want. And there's Will Anderson, the edge from Alabama. Tyree Jackson? I think it's Jackson, the edge from Texas Tech. There's Jalen Carter, the defensive tackle from Georgia. There are a lot of impact players that could just fall right in their lap because of the position that they're in, because the Broncos were awful last year, and this is the Broncos pick, this number 5 pick. So, they're the only real threat, because if you just look at the other two teams, the Cardinals and the Rams, let's start with the Rams, because the Cardinals literally haven't done anything.
Yeah.
But neither have the Rams. But here's the thing that the Rams did do. They got rid of Bobby Wagner, which, by the way, again, if you clear some cap space, I wouldn't mind bringing Bobby Wagner in to replace Aziz, right? Yeah. That'd be pretty dope. But they got rid of Bobby Wagner. They traded Jalen Ramsey. And they got rid of, was it Leonard Floyd?
Yeah.
And in those three moves, they cleared $61.2 million off their cap in 2024, not 2023. 2023, they still only have like $7 million in cap space. But they made those moves with an eye to 2024. And so, you know, with an eye to 2023, like you said, I'm not worried about the Rams. And then the Cardinals. Did you see that introductory video where Jonathan Gannon was meeting with those players? That was cringe. That was Michael Scott level cringe. That was brutal. But Kyler Murray probably out till halfway through this season, and then they're not even bringing players in. They're just not.
No.
It's like, I don't know what they're doing. I have no idea what their plan is. So, and again, I'm not worried about them at all.
I don't think Jonathan Gannon is that good of a coach anyways. Honestly, I don't think he's either. I thought that he benefited tremendously by having a really strong roster in Philadelphia. Yeah. And a lot of those guys got paid too, right? Like Darius Slay and these guys, like he had a good roster over there. Hassan Reddick, like he had a very, very good roster on defense. And I feel like he benefited from that. Fletcher Cox as well, Javon Hargrave, as we know, our own Javon Hargrave. So that being said, I'm not scared of that. The only thing that kind of makes me pause, not even scared, it makes me pause, is that Seattle is really, if you look at it, they're kind of just a quarterback away, really, if everything falls into place.
Certainly.
And is Geno that guy? And I kind of like was happy when they gave Geno that deal, because I was like, okay, I don't want them drafting a quarterback, because that could set them up for years to come. And I don't want them to sign a quarterback on the market that's better than Geno, because that's an upgrade and they would be better. But that being said, I'm banking on the fact that maybe it was lightning in the bottle for Seattle because I have to, because I hate them, right? But the bottom line is the same. The Niners have to take care of their own business. The reason why they went to the championship game last year is because they swept the division and they took care of business when they had control of it. And that is why they got as far as they did, because it didn't matter what anybody else did. They just beat whoever was in front of them. And, you know, as we kind of are winding down here, one thing that I want to potentially leave us with for later discussion in the offseason is, you know, we've talked about Brock's recovery and when he's going to come back and all that stuff, the timeline, but we haven't really touched on what we expect out of him, because right now it's just about the recovery, right? We haven't really talked about like what type of development do we want to see out of him? What type of, right? Because I haven't heard anybody talk about that for that matter at this point. And while it's early in the offseason and you can't do anything about that because he's still hurt and recovering, he just had surgery. But that being said, like I hope to see some sort of development out of him in year two, because look, he was fantastic in his first seven games, right? But there were some things there that he could work on and develop and be better at.
Certainly.
And I think that I'm excited to see that level of development in year two. And obviously I'm excited to see Trey and see how he's developed. Again, as I've been saying all offseason, we're going to see Trey start at least a couple games. It's going to happen. And I don't think Sam Darnold's here to take the starting spot. It'll be Trey's show until either somebody takes it away from him or until Brock Purdy comes back. So I think that's something to kind of keep our eye on is what the expectations are for Brock Purdy when he finally comes back into the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously always going to be growth, right? He was a rookie quarterback. But one of the things that I thought was interesting is, again, I will be the first person to tell you, I absolutely got swept up in the hype, right? I was the captain of the Brock Purdy hype train. And yes. And he played incredibly well, especially considering seventh round, Mr. Irrelevant, dropped into a situation where you're in the middle of a push for a playoff position and hopefully a Super Bowl, and a veteran laden team with expectations to win. Like, it wasn't an easy situation, but at the same time, you were dropped into a situation in which you had Christian McCaffrey and Debo Samuel and George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk and a incredibly talented play calling head coach. And you had an incredible defense on the other side of the ball. Like, he couldn't have been dropped into a better situation. But I heard Greg Cassell talk about this when he talked with Matt Maiocco on Radio Row during Super Bowl week. And then Rich Madrid, if anybody that's listening follows Rich on Twitter, Rich does a lot of film work. And he was showing this is a couple days ago. I would say probably within this past week, he was using film to show some of, especially as the season progressed, some of the areas where Brock seemed to, it almost looked like he started to regress a little bit. And that had to do with progressions, and it had to do with, pulling the trigger at the right time. And that's exactly what Greg Cassell talked about as well with Matt Maiocco, was towards the end of that run, late in the season and into the playoffs, Brock was leaving quite a bit of meat on the bone when it came to a lot of the pass plays, right? Where, there were times, and Rich used an example where, there was a situation where Brandon Ayuk was coming open and Brock checked it down, right? Rather than seeing Ayuk come open and hit that intermediate throw. And then we talked about, even during the run, right? When he gets in trouble in the pocket, he backs up, right? And that is not a habit that you can continue to have, and he needs to learn to step up into the pocket. And then the other thing was, if he escaped the pocket, it was almost exclusively to his left. And that is the type of tendency that teams can play into. And so, there are obviously things that he needs to work on. And I would imagine that Brock would tell you the same thing, right? That's the type of player that he is. And so, the development that I'm hoping to see is, again, just a better understanding of the offense, a better understanding of progressions. And to be perfectly honest, it's the growth that we need to see from Trey Lance as well, because that has been part of the problem for Trey as well, is you know, not going through the progressions or not making the right read or things of that nature. So for both of those guys, that's really the growth that you have to see. And then for Trey, on top of that is, you know, accuracy, right? Accuracy in the intermediate to short areas, and you know, hopefully a little less quarterback power and a little more opportunity to throw the ball.
Yes. A little less quarterback power and a little more quarterback empowerment, if you will.
There you go. Oh, I like it. I like it. Yeah. I like it. Awesome.
We should cut that and make a clip out of that. Definitely.
Yes. No more quarterback power. Let's do quarterback empowerment. Yes. I like it.
Yes.
I like it.
And
I like it.
That we should end on that. That's, I mean, that we won't find a better ending than that, Brian.
Probably not. Probably not. Some of the best endings you just kind of fall ass backwards into, right?
There you go. There you go. Absolutely. Well, I mean, we're going to get out of here, but man, next time we got a lot to talk about. There's draft season, AKA smokescreen season coming up. There's a few holes still to be left by 49ers free agency that are left to be filled. And we've got a lot of big plans as far as guests and things like that that are coming up that you guys will definitely want to be a part of. So for Brian Rennick, this is Zane Nackvi and the On Assignment Al Sacco, with another episode of the 49ers Web Zone No Huddle Podcast presented by Odyssey. Peace.
Later.